Chapter 40. Sarah Lynn stared at the open window. No! She let out a whispered cry. Harry didn't jump out. He wouldn't.
No, I said. He's hiding, like last time.
My heart was pounding so hard, I could hear the blood whistling at my temples.
Like last time, I repeated.
Where? Sarah Lynn demanded. Where did he hide?
I didn't answer. I ran back downstairs to the front hall. I tugged open the coat closet door.
Harry, it's okay, I said. You can come out. I gasped when I realized he wasn't in the closet.
This is where he hid?
Sarah Lynn leaned into the closet, shoving coats out of the way. No sign of him.
He's in the house somewhere, I stammered. He gets frightened and...
I'll search upstairs, she said. She turned me around by the shoulders.
You search down here. Search every closet, every room. We'll find him, I know we will.
But what frightened him?
The question just blurted from my mouth. I didn't even think of it.
Sarah Lynn, stop. If you didn't see the creature, if there was no creature, what frightened Harry?
It had to be your screams, she answered. Lisa, you screamed so loud. Your screams were so terrifying. They frightened me.
You're right, I murmured. Yes, you're right. I frightened Harry. Come on, let's find the poor guy and let him know he's safe.
She went running back up the stairs. I crossed the living room into the back hall. I searched the kitchen pantries and under the table.
Harry? Harry?
I cupped my hands around my mouth and shouted his name over and over. I searched the maid's room and back. Cardboard cartons were stacked to the ceiling in the tiny room.
Harry? Are you here?
No. I pulled open the doors to two other closets in the back hall. Then I returned to the living room. I glanced all around. My head was spinning. No, the whole room was spinning. Panic gripped my chest, tightened all my muscles.
Harry, can you hear me? Please come out!
I heard Sarah Lynn slam a bedroom door upstairs. I heard her shoes on the hallway floor. I decided to join her up there. I was nearly to the stairs when I heard a sharp noise outside. A hard bump, like some kind of collision. I stopped and listened, totally alert, not breathing. I heard shouts, scrabbling sounds, a hard thud. A fight. Two people fighting in the front yard? A sharp grunt. Another thud. I didn't think. I pulled open the front door and stepped out under the harsh glare of the porch light. I squinted down the front yard toward Fear Street. At first, I didn't see anything. Just the tall grass swaying lightly in a soft breeze. But the hiss made me spin toward the driveway. A hiss, like a dozen snakes all attacking at once. And then a scream. A hideous, painful scream. A scream that didn't stop. It seemed to ring in my ears forever. Frozen there in panic on the porch, I instantly knew I would never forget this scream. Never be able to erase it from my ears. And then I saw the creature lope away, half trot, half stagger toward the darkness of the street. I saw it, and I heard it grunt, grunt with panting breaths as it staggered away.
No!
A long, horrified moan burst from deep inside me as I saw the body, a heap on the grass near the driveway. I turned back to the house. Where was Sarah Lynn? Still upstairs? And then my legs carried me, against my will. My legs carried me over the grass, wet with evening dew, over the soft, swaying grass toward the heap on the ground. I stopped a few feet away. My stomach lurched. I slapped my hand over my mouth to keep from puking, pressed both hands over my mouth and stared at the mutilated body. Isaac. Yes, Isaac. His eyes stared up at me, wide and blank and shiny as glass. His mouth hung open, locked in a silent scream. His t-shirt was ripped down the front. His stomach was torn open. The skin split right down the middle. His intestines, pink in the moonlight, half eaten, like sausage links, spilled onto the grass.
Chapter 41.
Where were you when Lisa discovered the body?
Captain Rivera had his arms crossed in front of him, his eyes on Nate. We were back in the little windowless room at the Shadyside Precinct house, sitting tense around the table. Once again, my mother hunched on a folding chair behind me. Across the table were Nate and Sarah Lynn and their fathers. Captain Rivera perched restlessly at his end of the table, a paper container of coffee, an iPad, and a writing pad in front of him. Across from him, a woman officer. I think her name was Clemens. She had short, dark hair brushed straight back, tiny black eyes over a stub of a nose. She grimaced and scowled, as if she didn't want to be there. She kept fiddling with the cuffs of her black uniform shirt.
I wasn't there,
Nate answered. His voice cracked and he cleared his throat.
I was in my car, driving around, trying to find Isaac.
Nate kept scratching his face and twitching his nose. He seemed really tense. The room was hot. There was no air conditioning. Nate had large beads of sweat glistening on his forehead.
Where did you look for him?
Rivera asked.
Well, I started at his house,
Nate said.
He wasn't there. He was supposed to come join us after his band practice. But practice was over, I guess. No one was at his house.
So then what did you do?
Rivera asked.
Drove around the block a few times?
Nate replied, wiping sweat off his forehead with the sleeve of his t-shirt.
I drove past the school, looking for his car. I didn't know if he was walking or driving.
Rivera typed something on the iPad.
So, you weren't near Brenda Hart's house at around 10:30? You were still driving around, searching for your friend?
Nate nodded.
Yes, that's right.
Rivera turned his gaze to Officer Clemens.
Did the coroner send over a time of death?
She shook her head. Still working on it. He said it had to be between 9 and 10:30.
Sarah Lynn, let me ask you the same question,
Rivera said, stroking his mustache with the palm of his hand.
Where were you when Lisa discovered the body? Were you still in the house?
Sarah Lynn had tear stains on her cheeks. She had been crying nonstop all morning. She said she hadn't slept for one second last night, after I found Isaac in the grass. I'd never known her to be so emotional. But of course, I didn't know her that well. And this was an extreme situation. That morning, I asked myself why I didn't cry. I decided I was in some kind of shock. I didn't want to believe any of this was happening. Actually, I told myself I'd be happy if it was all another hallucination, all my own nightmare, or just happening in my poor, broken mind. Weird thoughts. But who wouldn't have weird thoughts after finding two people you know torn to pieces?
Yes, I was in the house, Sarah Lynn said. I didn't know Lisa went outside. I was upstairs looking for Harry.
The little boy,
Rivera said.
And where did you find Harry?
He was hiding, Sarah Lynn said. Hiding in a closet in a guest room. He said he heard shouts that scared him.
Rivera narrowed his eyes at Sarah Lynn.
He heard shouts? Inside the house or outside the house?
Sarah Lynn hesitated.
I don't know. Maybe he heard Lisa screaming.
I screamed when I saw something at the top of the stairs, I offered.
I know,
Rivera said, frowning.
We'll get to that in a minute.
He motioned to Sarah Lynn.
Go on. What about Harry? He heard shouts, so he hid in a closet. Like the last murder, am I right?
I don't know, Sarah Lynn said. I wasn't there last time.
She wiped tears off her cheeks with a tissue.
We knew Harry was freaked last night. We didn't tell him there was a murder, but he was very upset. We had to call the police, and I guess he overheard us, and he kind of lost it.
Rivera blinked.
Lost it?
Started crying and screaming he wanted his mom, I chimed in. He knew something was very wrong. He could see how upset Sarah Lynn and I were, so we became very frightened.
We did everything we could to calm him down, Sarah Lynn added, and we didn't tell him what happened outside. He just picked up the vibes, I guess.
He has a condition, I told Rivera. He's not supposed to stay up late. It messes up his brain circuits or something. His mom is angry at me for letting him stay up last night. But Sarah Lynn and I were downstairs. We didn't even know he was still awake.
Rivera typed some more on the iPad. His fingers were stubby, and he kept making mistakes. He sighed.
Okay, I guess we have no choice, he said, turning to me. I guess we have to discuss this creature thing. But I'm warning you, Lisa.
I saw it at the top of the stairs, I insisted. I swear, that's why I screamed.
Officer Clemens leaned forward.
What are we talking about here? She asked.
Some kind of creature, I said, my voice shaking. My heart was pounding. I knew they didn't want to believe me.
He walks on 2 feet. He looks like a man, except his face is twisted and ugly like a demon and...
Like a demon in a horror movie?
Rivera interrupted.
Do you watch a lot of horror movies, Lisa?
His question was hostile. He was accusing me of hallucinating the thing. But I knew I'd seen it. I knew. At least, I was pretty sure.
I don't like horror movies, I replied.
Ask Nate. Nate is a horror freak.
Rivera turned to Nate.
Is that true? Did you see a horror movie demon in Brenda Hart's house?
Nate shook his head.
No. Lisa says she saw it after I left the house to go look for Isaac.
I can describe him totally, I insisted. I'm not making him up. His skin is tinted greenish, a light green. He has red eyes that appear to glow, sunk deep in his face. His head is bald, except for a strip of thick black fur in the middle of his scalp. His ears are pointed and stand straight up.
My voice broke. I wanted so desperately to be believed.
I couldn't make that up, Captain Rivera, I said. I don't have that good of an imagination.
Oh, I think you do,
Rivera said. It was a stinging comment, meant to hurt me. And it did. Rivera didn't let up. He leaned closer to me.
You've had some mental problems, is that right?
Mental problems? My voice broke. No, not really,
You've had bad nightmares. You've seen things that weren't there.
She's working with a doctor. My mom chimed in. Mom, stay out of it! I shrieked. I realized immediately I shouldn't have yelled like that. I have to act calm. I can't give them any reason to think I'm crazy or unbalanced. Rivera's eyes burned into mine.
Lisa, did you have some kind of nightmare in which you were angry at Summer and Isaac? Did you maybe have a dream that you attacked them?
I uttered a loud gasp. Are you accusing me? I cried. Do you think I could have murdered those kids? My heart was drumming so hard, I could barely get the words out. Do we need to get a lawyer? My mom asked Rivera. He raised both hands.
I'm not accusing your daughter. I have to ask every question.
He leaned forward again.
Lisa, this demon creature you say you saw, was it you? Is it possible that you created this monster because you couldn't face what you did to Summer and Isaac?
A hush fell over the room. It was like time had stopped. All eyes were on me. No one even blinked. My whole body went rigid. I forced myself to breathe. And then a scream burst out of me from deep in my throat. No! I'm not crazy, and I'm not a murderer! My mother jumped to her feet. Lisa and I are leaving, she told Rivera through gritted teeth. We don't have to sit here and... Rivera waved her back down.
I'm sorry. I am not trying to upset you, but a boy and girl have been brutally murdered. They were your friends, and you were the only one who seems to know who killed them.
No, wait! I choked out. I didn't say...
You tell me it's some kind of monster,
Rivera interrupted.
I'm sorry. I can't accept that, Lisa. I need you to tell me the truth. Why won't you tell me what you really saw?
But I did, I insisted. Silence now. He kept his eyes narrowed on me, studying me, waiting for me to say more. He thinks I'm an insane murderer. A sob escaped my throat. My mother squeezed my hand. Rivera sighed and brushed a hand back over his shaved head. Finally, he turned his gaze from me.
Sarah Lynn, he said, you were in the living room with Lisa when she looked up the staircase and screamed. Did you see the creature too?
Sarah Lynn, tears in her eyes, silently mouthed words across the table to me. I'm sorry. She wiped the tears with one finger. Lisa pointed to the top of the stairs, she said softly. She was screaming. I mean, she was in a total panic. But I didn't see anything up there.
Did you see a shadow or something?
Clemens chimed in.
Something that might resemble a figure up there.
Sarah Lynn shook her head. No, nothing. Lisa kept screaming and pointing, telling me the creature was up there looking down on us, but the stairs were empty. I didn't see anything. Not anything. I felt so bad for her. She turned to me. I'm so sorry, Lisa, but there wasn't anyone up there. I'm so sorry. I didn't react. I didn't reply. It was like my brain froze. I suddenly felt numb, totally numb all over. Rivera asked Sarah Lynn a few more questions, but I didn't hear their conversation. I saw Sarah Lynn's mouth moving, but I couldn't hear the words. I had a loud whistling in my ears. The sound of my brain freezing, I guess. I didn't even try to hear what they were saying. I can't tell you how frightening it is to have your friends and everyone else think you are crazy, and maybe even a deranged murderer. It's frightening and frustrating and makes it impossible to think clearly or act normally or act at all. When the question session was over and we were all out on the street, Nate and Sarah Lynn hugged me and then disappeared as quickly as they could, along with their parents. I was left standing there in the precinct parking lot with my mom, still numb, still hearing that shrill whistling in my ears, still lost in my jumbled thoughts, wondering what really happened last night. And I turned to Mom and tugged at her good arm. I need to see Dr. Shine, I stammered. I think I really need her help. Sarah Lynn was there with me. She didn't see the creature, but I saw it so clearly, as if it was real. What's wrong with me? Chapter 42. Dr. Shine chewed the eraser on her pencil. Behind her, rain pattered the window. She had a vase of yellow lilies on the corner of her desk, and the sweet aroma washed over the office, so strong it made my eyes water. She listened in silence as I sat in the red leather armchair across from her and told my sad story. Her face remained expressionless. Behind her glasses, her eyes trained on me. She didn't blink. As I talked, I watched the raindrops slide slowly down the window. Like teardrops, I thought. The patter of the rain, the ticking clock on her glass desk, the hoarse sound of my voice as I relived the horrifying night. Those were the only sounds. And when I stopped talking, silence. Dr. Shine chewed at her eraser. Her gaze rose over my shoulders. She seemed to disappear into herself, as if she were fading into her thoughts. Even her aqua top under her cream-colored jacket appeared to lose its glow. When she finally set down the pencil, brushed back her hair, and spoke, her words weren't what I expected to hear. Lisa, she said, I thought you would be further along by now. The words stung. I don't think she meant to startle me or upset me, but I expected something a little warmer, a little more encouraging. She leaned forward. It's understandable, she said. These horrible murders of your friends, they are agitating you even more. And I'm afraid we're left with one difficult question. I clasped my hands together tightly. Where was she going with this? The question is, what can we do to make these hallucinations stop? I swallowed. My mouth suddenly felt as dry as cotton. Dr. Shine fingered the locket on her chest. You know I want to try everything I can to make you better, to make sure you return to functioning normally. I rubbed my damp hands on the knees of my jeans. But what if I really saw some kind of monster? Dr. Shine shook her head. Stop thinking like that, Lisa. Your friend Sarah Lynn was there. She didn't see anything, did she? If it was real, wouldn't she have seen it too? You don't really believe that you have a special power, do you? That you can see monsters other people can't see?
No,
I started, but let me explain what's happening, dear. she said, softening her tone. Let me tell you what your brain is doing. I settled back on the armchair. I took a deep breath to relax, but I couldn't force away the tension that tightened all my muscles. Okay, I said in a voice just above a whisper. Please, tell me. Dr. Shine shut her eyes for a moment, gathering her thoughts. You suffered a terrible loss, she started. Your father. You lost your father in an accident caused by human error. Your mind doesn't want to face that, Lisa. Do you see where I'm going? I nodded. I think so. Your mind doesn't want to face the truth, she continued. You'd rather think that some kind of monster was responsible for the awful things that happened. I thought about it for a long moment. I understood what she was saying, but I couldn't agree. What about Summer? I said. What about Isaac? They were torn apart. Their bodies were ripped open. Parts of them were eaten. Don't you think a monster? She shook her head. Think about it, Lisa. Once again, you want to replace a human with some kind of demon. The truth is, an evil human killed your friends. A very sick and dangerous person was responsible. But it was a person. Your mind wants to create a fantasy that...
You mean I'm crazy? I cried. Is that what you're trying to say? I slip into a fantasy world, and I don't know what's real, and what's only in my imagination?
I gripped the chair arms. My nails dug into the leather. I gritted my teeth hard and tried to stop my body from trembling. Dr. Shine motioned with one hand for me to calm down. Take a breath, Lisa, she said softly. Take a deep breath and let it out slowly. I didn't say you were crazy, dear. You have to listen more carefully. I'm sorry if my explanation is upsetting, but we can deal with this, and we will deal with this, together. I eyed her suspiciously. What do you mean? Again, she motioned with one hand. Sit back. You're all tense. Let yourself breathe. I followed her instructions. I pressed myself against the chair back. I unclasped my hands. I'm going to prescribe some meds to calm you down, she said. And I have a medication in mind that will work as a gentle mood elevator. I stared at her, my mind spinning. I didn't want to start taking medications, but I knew Dr. Shine was eager to help me. I knew she wouldn't do anything to harm me. If the meds would help, I'd be crazy not to try them. I think you will see an improvement in less than a week, she said. She pulled a prescription pad from her desk drawer. She leaned over it and started to write the prescription. After a few seconds, she looked up at me. If you keep seeing this creature, Lisa, I know a place to send you where there are experts at dealing with this kind of thing. I jumped to my feet.
You mean a mental hospital?
She nodded. Well, yes. Let's not even think about that now, dear. Let's just get better, okay? Chapter 43. I knew I shouldn't be sitting all alone in my room. I knew I'd start to brood and start to imagine things and think about the nightmare my life had been for the past few months. I stared at the boxes of pills on my dresser. I knew they would probably calm my brain and make me feel normal again. End my frightening fantasies. But I hadn't opened them yet. I kept staring at them and thinking about them. Once or twice, I opened a box and lifted the bottle out. but then I put it back down again. And then suddenly, there I was, sitting hunched on the edge of my bed, as if perched on the edge of the world. Any moment I felt I could fall off and plummet down. Down. Into the swirling fantasy world Dr. Shine said I was creating. I shut my eyes and pictured Nate. Nate had been so sweet, so nice to me, so considerate and kind. I knew he didn't believe in my creature, but that didn't stop him from caring about me. He was there for me. He was, well, my thoughts changed. My brain slipped into a different gear as Nate's face lingered in my mind. And before I even realized, I was flooded by dark thoughts about him. Frightening thoughts about Nate that couldn't be true. No way. No way. I fought my own mind. But I couldn't push the dark thoughts away. And there was Summer. With her beautiful coppery hair, her high cheekbones, as pretty as a model, so willowy and graceful. Summer wanted to talk to me. She wanted to warn me about Nate. She said I didn't know what I was getting into, that I didn't have a clue about Nate. When I told him about Summer's warnings, he laughed and said she was jealous. And then Summer was dead. Brutally murdered outside Brenda Hart's house. Nate had been there in the house that night. He was in the kitchen, and then he disappeared without telling me he was leaving. And after he vanished, the creature appeared. Is it possible that Nate transforms into some kind of demon? Is that what Summer wanted to warn me about? Ugh, stop, Lisa. Stop these thoughts. They truly are insane. You really are crazy if you suspect Nate. But what about Isaac? Isaac kissed me and Nate saw it. Then Isaac was the next victim. Summer, then Isaac. Nate had reason to be angry at them both. Reason to kill? No way. Stop it, Lisa. I knew I should get up. Go out, go do something, stop these crazy thoughts. But I sat there, hunched on the edge of my bed, hands flat on the mattress, staring down at the dark carpet and thinking. And again, I pictured the scratches down Nate's face, long scratches down both cheeks. Could walking into a rose bush really make scratches like that? He had to be lying, I decided. He got those scratches while murdering Summer. Suddenly, I felt certain that I had solved this horrifying mystery. Certain that I wasn't crazy. Certain that Nate was the demon. The demon of Fear Street. I hugged myself as my whole body shuddered. Outside, clouds moved over the sun, and my room darkened as if my thoughts had darkened the world. The breeze through the window grew chilly. I stood up, walked to the window, glanced out at the cold, gray world out there, then shoved the window shut. What could I do with my theory about Nate? Who could I tell? If Nate found out that I knew the truth, I would definitely be his next victim. Again, I pictured Summer. Her copper hair spread over the ground. Her head tilted at an impossible angle. Her stomach ripped open. Her glistening pink insides pouring out, puddling up on the grass. I shuddered again and my phone rang. I squinted at the screen. Nate. I didn't want to answer. But my finger swiped the screen before I could stop myself. Hello?
Lisa, hi. How's it going?
Okay, I guess.
Listen, you and I have to talk. Can I come over now?
Chapter 44. No, I can't, I stuttered. I tried to force my voice to stay steady. I didn't want him to hear that I was suddenly frightened of him. I have to go out with my mother, I lied.
Maybe later?
Nate said.
I really need to tell you.
Yeah, maybe later. I'll text you or something. I clicked off. I was squeezing the phone so hard, my hand ached. I have to get out of here, I said to myself. The phone rang again. Brenda Hart. Was she calling to fire me? I hoped so. I didn't want to go back there. Who would want to go back to that place of horror and death? Mom's arm was just about healed. The cast was coming off next week, so she could go back to work. I'd miss the money from the job, but it wasn't worth it. I swiped my finger over the screen. Hello, Brenda?
Lisa, please listen to me,
she said, her voice tight, urgent.
I know you probably don't want to come here again. I totally understand, but...
She hesitated. She's not firing me.
I have an emergency on my hands, Lisa. I've been called to a company meeting in Pittsburgh. It's kind of important. I need someone to stay with Harry overnight. Can you do it? Please say you can do it.
The clouds lowered outside the window. The room grew even darker, as if a heavy blanket was settling over me. I realized I was gasping for breath. I can't do this. This is suffocating me.
I'll pay you double, Lisa, Brenda pleaded. My sister can't take Harry. I need you to stay with him tonight. He misses you. He doesn't know anything about the dreadful things that have happened.
Well, the room was spinning. I stared into the deep gray outside the window. The world was suddenly black and white, as if I'd stepped into an old horror movie.
Can you come, Lisa? Can you stay overnight with him?
Brenda asked. I heard Harry shouting in the background.
Tell her to come! Tell her to come!
Okay, I said. I said the word before I'd really decided. Okay, what time do you want me?
Oh, thank you. I'm so grateful. Please, come around 6. Harry promises he'll go to bed early.
Harry did go to bed early. I had him tucked in at 7:45. He seemed tired the whole evening. He did a lot of loud yawning, and he barely touched the pasta Brenda had made for dinner. After dinner, he cuddled up in my lap, and I read him some chapters from a sci-fi kids' book about clones. He pressed his head against my shoulder and listened to every word. He smelled so sweet. I think he really wanted to be held. Maybe he was nervous because his mother was going away for the night. Nate texted me at 7:30. Where are you? Want to talk? I didn't reply. Just seeing his text made me shiver. Of course, I made sure the doors were locked, and I shut all the windows, even though it had turned into a steamy, warm night. After I tucked Harry in, I returned to the living room and walked over to the bookshelf where Brenda's photo albums were stacked. I wondered if there were photos of Nate and Sarah Lynn in any of the albums I hadn't looked at. I had a feeling, just a mild hunch, that maybe one of the albums would hold a clue for me. A clue to the truth about Nate. I was desperate for the tiniest bit of proof. Anything. Anything at all that I could take to Captain Rivera and say, "Look at this, I'm not crazy." I tugged out the second album on the pile, one I hadn't looked at on Friday night. I carried it to the couch and spread it open on my lap. Again, there were photos of Brenda and the guy I imagined was her husband. I flipped through quickly, searching for Nate and Sarah Lynn. These photos were a little older than the ones in the first album, Harry appeared to be 6 or 7. I was halfway through the album, and my eyes settled on a photo of a teenage girl holding Harry on her lap. The photo was taken in this living room. The girl was sitting on this same couch. Harry looked a little bit younger, but not much. He had one arm around the shoulder of the girl's pale blue sweater, and one hand gripping a book they were reading. I gazed at the photo. It caught my interest because the girl had such a sad expression on her face. Harry was grinning, his eyes wide. But the girl's face was drawn, her mouth pulled down, eyes blank, lifeless. She had stringy brown hair down the sides of her narrow face. One sleeve of her sweater was torn at the elbow. Under the photo, someone had written the word Joy with a black marker. Is that the girl's name? I wondered. Or is it supposed to be a description of the scene? She didn't look joyful to me. As I stared, raising the album close to my face, I couldn't decide if she was sad or frightened. As I started to return the album to my lap, a folded-up sheet of paper fell out. I closed the album and set it down on the couch cushion beside me. Then I picked up the paper and unfolded it. It was a letter to Brenda. A very short letter, handwritten in small letters in dark blue ink. My eyes scanned down to the bottom. The letter was signed, Sincerely, Joy. So Joy was the girl's name. Gripping the letter in both hands, I began to read. 32 Jameson Way, Shadyside. Dear Brenda, I know you will understand why I can't babysit for Harry anymore. He's a terrific boy, really awesome, and I loved taking care of him. But so many frightening things, well, it has all given me nightmares. Bad nightmares. I know it's not your fault, but I can't sleep and I can't eat, and my schoolwork is really in the pits. My family really needs the money, but my mom says I have to quit, and I think she's right. I'm sorry. I know you have to go to work every afternoon and you need somebody, but it just can't be me. Please tell Harry I said bye. Sincerely, Joy. I read the letter through quickly. Then I went back to the top and read it slowly. By the time I finished the second reading, my hands were trembling. I tucked the letter back in the album. It took a while for the words to settle in my brain. It took me a while to see clearly what the letter meant. For one thing, Brenda had lied to me. When she interviewed me for the job, she said she was starting a new job, and that's why she needed someone to stay with Harry. She said Harry had never had a babysitter. But the letter and the photo proved that Joy had been the babysitter before me. And Joy had to quit, because frightening things were giving her nightmares. Joy looked so sad and bedraggled, even with a grinning Harry on her lap. What frightened her? What had given her the nightmares? There was no clue in her letter, and no clue in the photo of her in the album. I jumped to my feet. I felt a surge of excitement sweep down my body. I guess it was because I knew what I had to do. I had to go see Joy. I had to talk to her as soon as I could. Chapter 45. It took me a few days to find the time. I took the car. I told Mom I was going to the mall just to walk around and window shop. But I headed toward the address on Joy's letter. I knew where Jameson Way was. It was off the river road in North Hills. It was a bright afternoon, the sun golden and low in the sky. Right in my eyes, as I followed the road along the Conanunca River.
squinting into the glare on the windshield. I wished I'd remembered my sunglasses. I kept picturing Joy, her name all wrong. Someone so sad-looking shouldn't be called Joy. I wanted her to tell me everything. I wanted to share my terrifying experiences in the house on Fear Street with her. Would she talk with me? Would she want to talk about it with a total stranger? I followed the river road toward Jameson. Some people were kayaking on the river, their yellow kayaks bobbing in the shimmering water. Some people are having fun, I thought. Yes, I was feeling sorry for myself. I barely had time to grieve for my father before the horrible murders began. Now everyone thought I was crazy, even my doctor. Joy had to help me. She had to. I turned on to Jameson and found myself driving past blocks of small red brick houses set behind square lawns. Four or five kids were gathered around a wide, trunked tree at a corner house, shouting and gesturing. I realized they were trying to talk a cat down from a low limb. I found 32 Jameson on the third block. The house had once been painted white, but now the paint was peeling, and patches of red brick showed through. An awning over the front window was torn and flapping in the warm breeze. There were no driveways or garages with these houses. I parked Mom's car at the curb. Then I straightened my hair using the rearview mirror and climbed out of the car. I could hear the kids cheering on the next block. I guessed they had succeeded in rescuing the cat. Gazing at the concrete stoop in front of the small house, I began walking up the front lawn. I could tell it hadn't been mowed yet this spring. The ground beneath the sprawling grass was lumpy and hard. A black mailbox was hung beside the front door. It had the number 32 in stenciled silver letters on the front. My chest felt fluttery as I climbed the two steps onto the stoop. I pressed the doorbell and took a deep breath. Joy, please be home. I didn't have to wait long. A short woman with cropped gray hair pulled the door open as if she'd been waiting in front of it. Her silver gray eyes looked me up and down. Her face was overly made up, with bright red circles on her cheeks and thick lipstick over her mouth. She wore a black and yellow Steelers sweatshirt over gray sweatpants.
Hello,
Can I help you?
She asked in a hoarse smoker's voice. Her face was tight with suspicion. She sneered.
You're too old to be selling Girl Scout cookies.
That made her start to laugh, a dry, raspy laugh that ended in a coughing fit.
I'm looking for Joy,
I said when she finally stopped hacking and coughing. She winced. Her eyes bulged for a quick second. She narrowed the strange, silvery eyes at me.
Is this a joke?
No, I stammered. Does she live here? Is she your daughter? I really need to talk to her.
The woman sneered again, revealing yellowed teeth.
Did someone dare you to do this?
She demanded.
Did someone play a mean joke on you? Is that what this is?
I swallowed. I took a step back and nearly toppled off the stoop.
No,
I started.
Everyone knows Joy isn't here,
the woman rasped.
Do you know where she is?
I asked.
Of course, I know where my own daughter is,
the woman snapped.
She's in the hospital, isn't she? She's in the hospital up in Martinsville. Why would you come looking for her here when she's in the state hospital?
I didn't know,
I stammered. I backed off the stoop.
Really, I didn't know.
Joy's in the state mental hospital, the woman shouted. She doesn't need any Girl Scout cookies.
Chapter 46. I found the hospital after driving around the same neighborhood twice. The streets in Martinsville are all one way and confusing. And even though it's the next town to Shadyside, everyone always has to circle in on where they are going. There's never a direct route to anywhere. While I was driving, I had plenty of time to think. My thoughts weren't bright or happy or hopeful. The more I thought about Joy, the more I was frightened for myself. She had the same job before me. She babysat for Brenda Hart and took care of Harry. And terrible things happened. Things frightening enough, horrifying enough to put her in the state mental hospital. Of course, my biggest question was, am I next? The hospital was a tall, white stucco building with tall hedges all around. Three cherry trees in the front had lost most of their blossoms. I parked the car in a visitor parking lot and followed a narrow stone path to a side entrance. A bronze plaque beside the door proclaimed that the hospital was built by someone named Jacobus Fear in 1911. The silhouette of a face of a distinguished-looking man wearing a bowler hat was carved into the plaque. At least they didn't call it Fear Hospital, I thought. I was met at the door by a middle-aged man with shaggy white hair. He wore a gray uniform, like a custodian's uniform. His cheeks were bright pink and his blue eyes gleamed, as if he was happy to see me. His cheeks were so close-shaved, it looked like he had peeled off layers of his skin. "I'd like to see one of the patients," I said. He didn't reply. He held the door open, then led the way down a long, dimly lit hallway of dark green walls and a hard, tiled floor. The air smelled like cleaning products, very piney and sharp. I heard voices all down the hall, laughter and shouts, and music playing, some mellow rock tune I didn't recognize. The man walked jauntily with his back straight up, shoulders back. He led me to a round desk in what had to be the front hall. A sign on the desk read, "Information," but no one sat there. The man smiled at me, his cheeks burning, and motioned for me to wait. Then he took my hand, raised it to his mouth, and licked it. "Hey!" Before I could pull my hand free, he slobbered all over the back of my hand. Then he uttered a short, high-pitched giggle. He turned and strode away, a strange, stiff walk with his back as straight as an ironing board. Well, what did I expect? I am in a mental hospital. I heard moans, sad moans, from a hallway on the other side of the desk. Someone shouted, "My cracker is on fire! My cracker is burning!" Then silence. A Barry Manilow song played from somewhere behind me. I had a sudden strong feeling that I shouldn't be here. I should have called ahead. What made me think it's okay to visit? Sure, I desperately wanted to talk to Joy, but the clatter of voices down the long halls, the sad cries and moans, the voices became noise. The noise turned into a roar. I must have turned away from the desk because a woman appeared in the chair as if by magic. She had wavy brown hair, tied back with a red scrunchie. She appeared to be 50 or so. She had a colorful scarf at the neck of her blouse and wore a dark business suit with a gold pin of a bird on one lapel. She scrolled down the monitor in front of her and typed something, eyes reflecting the screen. Finally, she turned to me.
"Sorry, I was on my break."
"No problem," I said. "I wasn't waiting long,
Did Travis lick your hand?"
she asked. I held it up for some reason.
"Yes, he did."
She shook her head. Her eyes flashed with amusement.
He's a nice man. That's his way of showing that he likes you.
I came to visit someone, I stammered. Is it okay? I mean, are there visiting hours? Her expression turned serious. She glanced at her screen, then back at me.
Which patient would you like to see?
I suddenly realized I didn't know her full name. Her name is Joy, I said. She blinked.
Joy Fergus?
I nodded. The woman toyed with the bird pin on her lapel.
Are you a family member?
No, I'm a close friend, I lied.
Well, I can check for you,
she said, chewing her bottom lip.
But I'm afraid Joy isn't having one of her good days.
Sorry, I murmured. If I could only... She picked up the desk phone and talked to someone. Her eyes studied me while she talked. She tisked and talked some more in hushed tones I couldn't hear.
And what is your name?
She asked me, hanging up the phone. I told her. She handed me a clipboard with some kind of form on it.
Just sign at the bottom, she said. They will bring Joy to the library. You can talk to her there.
I signed it. My hand was shaking so hard I couldn't read my own name. I heard a howl from down the hall, and then someone giggling loudly. The two sounds blended together and rang off the walls of the waiting room. The woman pointed down the hall to her right.
You'll see the library. It's near the end of the hall.
I thanked her.
Joy may seem different to you, she added. She is slightly sedated, which makes her talk slowly. But she's doing very well, most days.
I thanked her again and stepped into the hallway. A cold feeling of dread swept over me as my shoes clicked over the hard floor. Doors on both sides of the hall were closed, but I could hear voices in almost every room. A white-uniformed nurse with a tall afro hairdo led a young woman past me. The woman was sobbing, dabbing at her face with a yellow handkerchief, and sobbing so hard she struggled to breathe. Joy Fergus was waiting for me in the library. I stopped at the doorway and studied her. The room looked like a comfortable living room, with armchairs and couches and bookshelves against three walls. Pale light trickled in through a tall window in the back. Even though it was spring, a low fire burned in a brick fireplace. I took a deep breath and stepped inside. Joy was sitting stiffly in a dark leather armchair. She turned as I entered. She looked better than in the photograph I'd seen in Brenda's house. Her brown hair was pulled neatly back in a tight ponytail. She had pale orange lipstick on her lips, and her eyes were big and clear. She wore a long-sleeved blue tank top and baggy faded jeans with a hole on one knee. Hi, I said. I gave an awkward wave as I came close. I'm Lisa. She had a half-smile on her face, but it faded as I stepped up to her chair. They told me a friend came to see me. Are you my friend? I shook my head. Sorry, I kinda lied about that. She nodded. Okay. Her voice was deep and smooth, velvety. I gazed at her. She seemed totally normal in every way. The only thing that marked her as a patient was the white name bracelet around her left wrist. Can I sit down? I asked, motioning to the armchair across from her.
Sure,
she said. She crinkled her forehead.
Do I know you?
No, I'll explain, I said. The armchair was softer than I expected,
and it made a loud whoosh as I sank into it.
I have a problem with strangers,
she stammered, lowering her dark eyes. I'm sorry, I said. I won't keep you long. I just want to talk to you about...
Who are you?
She interrupted, eyeing me suspiciously. She tugged at the ID bracelet on her wrist.
Tell me, who are you? Did they send you from school?
No, I said. I'm sorry. She had been calm, but now I could see she was getting agitated. She tugged at the bracelet, then clasped and unclasped her hands. Really, I'm sorry to bother you, I said. You see, I babysit for Harry, Brenda Hart's son, and... Her whole body arched up and went stiff. Her dark eyes bulged. She jumped to her feet.
I can't talk about that.
No, just 1 minute, please, I begged. I jumped up too and stood facing her. I need to know.
I have nightmares, she said.
Her smooth voice had become strained, harsh.
I have nightmares. That's why I have to stay here.
I have nightmares too, I said. And I've seen things in the house. I've seen... She raised both hands and backed away from me.
I can't talk. Please go away.
I just need to know some things, I insisted. But she covered her ears with her hands.
I can't talk,
she said through gritted teeth.
I can't talk. He's a demon. He's a monster.
I gasped. You know Nate? Nate Goodman? Do you?
He's a demon, she cried. He's my nightmare. He's a demon.
A stab of cold at the back of my neck froze me in place. Nate, I gasped. Joy stood red-faced, her hands still pressed tightly over her ears. Please, Joy, I begged. Tell me.
He's a demon.
The door swung open, and two nurses burst in, eyes on Joy. They grabbed her arms gently. One of them smoothed a hand down her back, petting her, comforting her. The other one turned to me.
Don't blame yourself. She has these bad days. It's not your fault.
Chapter 47. Nate wasn't in school. Someone said he had a virus or something. Sarah Lynn said she hadn't talked to him. She had been away doing college visits with her parents in Boston. Sarah Lynn wants to study to be a nutritionist. Sure, she hangs out at Lefty's like the rest of us, gobbling his $2 double cheeseburgers. But she thinks she can improve people's lives by teaching them the right way to eat. She says she will probably become a vegan someday, but not till after high school, because Lefty's hamburgers are so good. I cornered her in the hall before third period study hall to question her about Nate. Why was Summer coming to warn me about him? I demanded. Sarah Lynn leaned back against a locker. Beats me. They went out together for a while in 10th grade. I think maybe she was too intense for him or something. Did she know something bad about Nate? I asked. Sarah Lynn scrunched up her face. Bad about Nate? Like what? I shrugged. You're his cousin. Is there something weird about Nate? Lisa, you mean because of his horror collection? No, I said. Something weirder. Nate is Nate, she replied. What do you want me to say? I want you to tell me if he turns into a demon late at night and murders and eats people he doesn't like. I want you to tell me if he terrified Harry's last babysitter and drove her crazy. I want you to tell me if I'm in danger. The bell rang. The hall emptied out as everyone headed to class. I can't tell you anything, Sarah Lynn said. Sorry. She turned and headed down the hall, her backpack bouncing on her back. I picked up Harry at Alice's house at 4. Harry grabbed my hand. He was eager to go home. He wore a funny SpongeBob t-shirt and baggy white shorts that seemed way too big for him. He had a smear of chocolate on his chin.
"Alice said we can bake brownies when we get home," he said, tugging my hand hard.
His blue eyes pleaded with me.
"Can we?"
"Well..."
"Brenda left a box of brownie mix for you on the sink," Alice said, appearing behind me.
She had a stack of folded laundry in her arms.
"Nice,"
I said. Alice narrowed her eyes at Harry.
"You can have brownies tonight, if you promise to go to bed on time."
Harry raised his right hand and uttered in a deep voice,
"I swear."
For some reason, that made Alice and me both laugh. I guess it was the solemn way Harry said it.
"Okay, brownie night tonight," I said.
Harry tugged me to the back door. I called goodbye to Alice and followed him outside. A sunny afternoon, warm with a cool breeze shaking the fresh spring leaves so that the trees all seemed to be whispering. Two robins were ducking their beaks into the back lawn, pulling up fat brown earthworms. Harry and I strolled to the front of the house, then along the sidewalk toward his house. Joy was on my mind. I hadn't stopped thinking about her. I decided I had to ask Harry about her.
"Did you have a babysitter before me?"
I asked. He nodded.
"Yes."
"What was her name?"
"Joy. She was nice, but she had to leave."
"Why did she have to leave?" I asked him. The sun washed over his blonde hair and made it glow. His blue eyes stared up at me. He didn't answer.
"Why did Joy leave?"
I repeated.
"Mom said she got sick."
He kicked a small stone to the curb. He ran ahead and kicked it again. The conversation had ended.
Joy got sick, all right, I thought.
Something happened that sent her to a mental hospital. We'd walked a full block. I suddenly realized Harry was traveling a little light.
"Harry, your backpack."
His eyes went wide.
"Uh-oh, I left it at Alice's."
He raised his hands in a begging pose.
"Could we leave it there?
And not do your homework tonight?" He nodded with a grin.
"No way."
I stopped him with both hands on his shoulders.
"You stay right here. Don't move. I'll get it."
I turned and took off running before he could argue. My shoes thudded the grass as I darted through the front lawns of the houses I'd passed. A few seconds later, I stepped into Alice's kitchen, breathing hard. No sign of her in the kitchen.
"Alice, it's only me," I called.
I hurried to the little office at the side of the house where Harry and Alice held their classes together. Harry's backpack was usually on the table they used, but not today. I didn't see it in the living room either. Did he leave it in the kitchen? I was halfway through the back hall when I heard the howls. I stopped and listened. The cries sounded so sad and so human. Definitely not a cat. Such sad, desperate howls for help. From the basement? I hesitated at the top of the basement stairs. Then I grabbed the wooden banister and made my way down the stairs. I was nearly to the bottom when I turned and saw who was howling. And then my startled scream echoed through the basement.